This Twin Peaks Investing Podcast is brought to you in association with SharePad from ShareScoop, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. Visit ShareScoop.co.uk and discover the advantage.
Hello and welcome to Twin Peaks, the investing podcast brought to you by Peter Higgins at Conkers 3 on Twitter and Peter Wheelie Dealer at Wheelie Dealer on Twitter. This is podcast 27. Thank you, ladies and gents from all over the world for coming back to have another listen to us. And thank you also for those that attended Mellow Virtual on Friday, where Pete and I did a live podcast. So if you're brand new to us, thank you for coming back. If you've subscribed to this podcast, thank you for your continued support. And Pete and I very much enjoyed Mellow Virtual. And because of that, we're going to continue in that vein and we're going to answer some of the questions we didn't get a chance to answer live on Friday. But we'll get back to those later on. Hello, Pete. How are you?
Yeah, not bad, mate. Not bad. It's been a funny old time on the markets, isn't it?
It certainly has, mate. And we had some good news out of America yesterday, and the American markets flew. And today we've got some good numbers out of one of their major banks. And again, the markets has gone for a little bit of a sprint higher. And it's right at the top of the range that we spoke about in the last podcast when we were saying, you know, getting up towards 6,330 odd. So...
yeah, on the FTSE 100,
FTSE 100, yeah. So this morning it was about 6,179 and it went to 6,323 and it finished up 1.83% at 6,292. So that's right back at the top of that range. So it really depends on where the Americans finish tonight, the American markets, that is. And,
yeah.
Where and how we react to that tomorrow, and that could take us out of that range of 6,350, and then if that is the case, we could have a nice run towards the end of the week. But as we know with all these things, it's very, very fickle. Tomorrow, allegedly, there could be news coming out regarding Oxford vaccine, which obviously entails AstraZeneca.
And if that's why AstraZeneca's jumped then, because it was up like nearly 5% today. I was like, wow, I was thinking Conky's going to be really happy with that one, you know.
Yeah, I mean, this is it. I mean, each time they've been in the news talking about AstraZeneca and this vaccine, the share price has moved higher. And then the next day or the 2 days later, when either good news or, sorry, not so good news or not the news that the market's expected, the stock then falls away. I think what a lot of people don't really understand here is that a lot of the movement on AstraZeneca shouldn't really be about this COVID 19 vaccine, because they're not going to make that much money out of it.
That's such a small part of what they do, isn't
such
it?
Such a small part. I think the significance is the recognition of already a behemoth brand that they may be part of that solution, and they've enhanced what's been going on with the Oxford scientists. So yeah, it's good for them if they come out with some good news tomorrow or the day after. It won't be so good for them if they don't come out with some news in the next week or so. But the share price will just go back down towards 85. I didn't see the close with regard to AstraZeneca, Pete, before we came on, but it was inching towards £90 again.
Oh, it's right up near its all-time highs, and you know, it looks to me like it's, you know, gone for a little period where it's sort of drifted a little bit down, and now it's swinging back up again, you know. And I mean, I hold it, you hold it. I'm, you know, very, very happy to be in it. It's pretty obvious that healthcare is the place to be at the moment. And, you know, when I look across my stocks at which ones have done well, it's nearly always healthcare ones that have done well.
Well, this is a conversation we were having back in February, March, when I was reappraising my portfolio and making them as resilient as possible and making sure they had lots of tech in there and COVID resilient stocks and ones that could do well in that sort of environment. And as you've said, you know, I think you mentioned Clinigen a few times, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
I bought into Hikma when it was getting sold off. You and I have had AstraZeneca for numerous years, and other people have had AstraZeneca and Glaxo as well. and have all held up reasonably well, if not done phenomenally well. And AstraZeneca is a FTSE 100 company. The last time I looked this afternoon was up nearly 19% year to date, and that's not bad for a FTSE. That's, you know,
it's incredible, isn't it, for a FTSE 100? Yeah,
subpar FTSE, it's up 18-19%. That's pretty good. I'm pretty happy with that.
It's interesting because AstraZeneca is one that I'm very happy to hold, you know, because of the momentum, because of all the news. What I love is that news flow. There's always news about various trials and things, and we can expect that going forwards. And then you look at like Glaxo, you're getting a sort of similar move towards more focus on, you know, less on the sort of health, you know, what is it, the health side of the business, and more on, you know, respiratory and oncology and stuff like that. And you're getting better news flow from Glaxo lately. And I can see that going forwards. And you know, you get a nice big dividend with that one as well. I think you get like near 5% still.
Yeah, I think what's going to happen, Pete, over the next 6 months or so, you've seen all the grief that the likes of the tobacco companies have had and the oil companies have had. And you can see those income seekers who have been upset by what's been happening with those companies moving across potentially to the likes of Glaxo and AstraZeneca. And quite interestingly, I was reading something, I forget where it was, where it was written and who it was written by, but with regards to the tobacco companies, Bats and Imperial, etc., they were saying that since the lockdown in the past 3 months, the number of people, and this is in the UK only, so you can push that across the rest of the globe.
Yeah.
1 million people potentially have stopped smoking. We knew that the smoking was, you know, reducing anyway. But obviously, if you're in lockdown and it's that you've got health concerns in your household, or you can't go outside of your workplace because you're not at work and you're at home and you're not walking into the garden, you're not going out of your house, all these other people thought, sod it, I'm giving up, I'm stopping smoking. So that's quite a significant chunk of revenue that could be missing from tobacco companies going forward. If those
and they're faced with so many challenges as it is, you know, with the switch from traditional tobacco towards the sort of next generation stuff, which, you know, they're sort of struggling with, really, aren't they? They haven't, you know, made much headwind with that, I don't think. And it's interesting what you say, because it's like, it's almost like the old normal. I hate that term, but, you know, the old normal, when you went to the office, when you went to the pub, when you went to the restaurant, you had loads of social reasons to smoke. When you're stuck at home, and if you're stuck at home with your kids, or you're stuck at home with a husband or wife who doesn't smoke, there's a lot of pressure on you to give up. And it's probably the easiest time to give up you're ever going to get. And I think that's what a lot of people have done.
Yeah, I think that's a possibility. I think... The concerning thing for me, Pete, is that those income funds that have always had that, those individual companies in their portfolios, they're going to have to slowly but surely over a course of time reduce their exposure to those companies.
Yeah.
So that's going to create a knock-on effect for the share price for those. And they're quite sizable with regards to component of the FTSE 100. So that could drag on the already undervalued, as most people see it, the FTSE 100 index. But they're going to have to switch into the others. So that may then almost balance it back out, in a sense of, do they put it into GSK? Do they put it into AstraZeneca? Do they put it into another dividend payer within the FTSE? And,
yeah, because there's still quite a lot of big dividends out there.
Absolutely. And we know that they won't put it into the miners, really. They'll have to put it somewhere that's a bit safer and a bit lower risk.
So yeah,
it's going to be interesting 6 months to a year as to where these funds move regarding that. And we touched on that in the live podcast at Mellow about the need for certain entities to be more environmental, ESG, when we were talking about Boo. So I think that's going to be another thing that pushes some companies to move away from tobacco as well.
Well, I mean, tobacco's got that big cloud over it for that, hasn't it? You know, and it has done for a long time. On the healthcare ones, I hold Clinigen as well. You mentioned it just now, CLIN. Interesting, they got absolutely battered yesterday. I think they were down like 14%. But they're up again today. They've recovered 5% of it. And the update wasn't that bad. You know, I mean, you read it, you sort of think, well, why have... I just think that the market has been really volatile and very low volumes in recent weeks. So it doesn't take much to push a share price down a lot or push it up a lot. And I think that's what was happening with Clin yesterday, because it just seemed a ridiculous overreaction.
I didn't see those results, Pete, but what...
Yeah, I didn't mean they were that bad. I think it was in line with expectations and stuff.
Okay. Is it about the fact that people were expecting more then, if it was just in line?
No, well, maybe that's it. I don't know. I mean, it strikes me as a very undervalued stock anyway. I think what probably did it was one of their drugs, I can't remember the name of it now, one of their drugs is coming up against a generic challenger. And I think that's maybe what the sellers were picking up on. But equally, they've got another drug that actually, you know, is probably going to contribute a lot in the next few years. So, you know, there's counterbalancing things anyway. So it just seemed a ridiculous overreaction, really.
Okay. Yeah, it's not one I follow that much, Pete, but you've done well out of it long term. So I dare say there's always going to be profit takers when the results come out, mate. Always. You know.
Exactly. I think sometimes as a long term investor, you've got to be sort of like a bit pig headed and you've got to say, well, no, you know, this is a good stock. Yes, short term, there may be an odd drag on it, but I'm sticking with it because I think this is a really good company. And I think that's what you've got to do sometimes.
I would agree with you on that, Pete, as we are long-term investors. But, you know, given what we've seen on the markets and recent polls, you know, people aren't researching these stocks and people aren't holding on to these stocks. You know, we've got people that are saying, I'm a long-term shareholder.
That's a fortnight, isn't it?
And and they've not held a single stock beyond 3.5 years, 4 years. You know, and researching it wise, there's a poll that was done recently saying I researched a stock for less than an hour. What can you know about a company if you've researched it for an hour? You know, I would expect traders to do about an hour, you know, on a stock that they're looking to punt on and have a little bit of a dabble on for a couple of days or a swing trade. But for somebody to say they're an investor to only research a stock for an hour, I don't know what that research would entail.
And that probably includes 10 minutes of booting up their PC and doing a virus.
Oh my God.
And a 5-minute break in the middle to pop to the loo.
You could be right. I mean, it takes all kinds. I mean, we've all got to find our own way of doing it. But when a stock moves 5 or 10%, you don't know, you're not going to know the reasons why, other than trying to find out on Twitter or Google or somewhere else. Because you haven't looked into the company and what their expectations are or what they should be doing to gauge whether you should be selling or buying more.
I think so. That's a good point, actually. I think sometimes it's like we all want to see a reason for why something's moved. And sometimes there isn't really a reason as such. Sometimes it is simply that volumes are low, traders are doing whatever they're doing, and you get these exaggerated moves. And I think that's often what happens.
Well, I mean, case in point, Pete, you know, because you know I like to research my stock to the nth degree, you know, with an inch of the life. And, we've spoken before about tells. And for those that don't understand tells, it's almost like playing poker where someone gives it away that they've got a good hand. And for me, I thought I'd saw a tell in a company and it was just drifting for no reason. And I thought, what's going on here? They've said that, you know, they've got a joint broker recently, yeah? And they've paid off part of this bond debt that they had. And I thought, everything's tickety-boo with this company. So what is going on? Why is it drifting here? And I went on to Twitter and I just said, basically, this share is down 7%, you know, on low volume. They've repaid their debt in May. Yeah, and they've got repay the debt in May, and they've got a joint broker recently. I'll be really dismayed if they've repaid a debt and they're looking to raise more money. You know, I'll be very, very miffed. I've done more research, and everything should be fine with this stock.
And
it's dropped from plus 60, and it's down at 52 pence. And lots of people came and answered my question, said, look, don't need to worry. IR's confirmed joint broker coverage only, and they're not going to be raising money and blah, 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 blah. Don't worry about it. And I thought, yeah, I've heard all that before. next day, the company, International Personal Finance, came
out. IPF.
Came out with a stonking bit of news, Pete. And I think what happened was I'd lost track of when the date was for their update. Yeah?
Yeah.
And the update was really, really good. And those that were cautious and a bit weary of it being another poor trading update were selling out.
Yeah, because they've had a history of things.
Yeah. And obviously, it's a case of how much can you get people to pay back the loans that you've given them. Yeah? Mm. So the next day, IPF was up 15%, Pete.
Amazing.
So that's how wrong you can be. And you can almost be too paranoid, even when you've researched the stock fully. Yeah?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And it's interesting as well because, you know, you've held AstraZeneca for basically ever, right? I think you had it before you were born. And I think your mum had it when you were conceived or something. But, God blimey, that's a bit of a fault. Anyway, sorry.
Move on, Pete. Yeah.
My point was that you've had to be fairly pig-headed about AstraZeneca because you've had loads of opportunities when the share price has been absolutely smacked. And somebody without, you know, somebody with weak commitment to that stock or whatever would have sold it. You know, over the years, you've had so many chances to sell it, if you see what I mean. But you stuck with it and you said, no, I like this company. I'm sticking with it and it's paid off. And I think it's an important thing to think about, really.
It is. But the thing is, Pete, you know, I've been fortunate enough that AstraZeneca has gone on to execute and they've not been coming back to the market for the fifth time, the 10th time, the 20th time.
And yeah.
Dependent on the size of the company that you're in, the likelihood is if it's an AIM mining resources stock or an AIM, you know, I'm looking to find a test for this and a this for that and whatever, they're going to keep coming back to the market. They're going to keep coming back to the market and they're going to dilute your initial investment to oblivion. Yeah, and I say to people...
Yeah, so you've got a major downtrend, basically, whatever happens.
You've got a major downtrend, no matter what happens. Yeah. So you're always going to be waking up to another placing or a fundraising or whatever. And, you know, I think the biggest test I had, or one of many regarding holding AstraZeneca since 94, was the Mystic one, where prior to that, Neil Woodford was saying, this is the best pharma company out there, best in class, you know, I'm intending to hold this forever. Whilst almost at the same time, you know, looking back at history now, he was selling and exiting the stock. And then when he eventually revealed a year later that he, you know, I've sold out, I'm out of AstraZeneca now, the market just dropped a jaw and went, you what? And then the share prices went lower and lower and lower. And it was in its 40s, from being as high as, you know, mid-50s, Pete.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I was sat there going, oh, my God, probably the most revered person I had at the time as a UK investor, long-term investor, was Neil Woodford. Mm. If he's saying get out, you best get out. And everyone was saying to me, get out. And I thought, no, because we've got an ageing population of all around the world. They've got all this stuff going on. And if they can rectify this and go on, they'll be fine. And I had to go against everything that was crying out, sell, Pete.
And, but it's like your brain was saying to you, you've got to sell this stock.
You've got to sell this stock. You've got to listen.
Yeah. You're always fighting yourself, aren't you?
Yeah. And this is what's going on. This is about the cognitive dissonance and the biases that we've got.
Absolutely.
So you've got to be careful that you don't listen to your own biases. You know,
and yeah.
Some would say I was listening to my own bias because, you know, clearly everything that appeared wrong led him to sell out. But actually, when I look back at history as well, the reason why he was selling out was because he wanted to move into a different sector and different stocks. And that was the largest component of what he wants.
He wanted to buy loads of private unlisted companies.
Well, let's not even go there, Pete. But we all know what happened after that. Essentially, he lost himself and investors billions by selling AstraZeneca in the low 40s. Yeah. And right now, AstraZeneca is £90 a share nearly.
Well, it's not only the missed opportunity, it's the fact he then bought a load of rubbish with the money. That's the shocking thing. Yeah. Back on the markets and stuff in general, the FTSE 100 is really interesting at the moment because it did a 13-21-day EMA bear cross a few days ago, which was, you know, is not a great sign for bulls. But it's interesting because with the move today, I think it probably has done a bull cross, or it's very near a bull cross. So we could be in that quite unusual situation where you get a bear cross followed by a bull cross pretty quickly. And that's actually quite a bullish sign, especially with everything else bullish. I think we need to see some strength in the FTSE 100 in coming days to, you know, to if it starts going weak again, then there's a problem. But I think if it's strong for the next few days and everything else can remain nice and bullish, then I think things are actually set quite good for bulls.
I'm going to say I think you're spot on there, Pete. I've been looking at the technicals, and I know there's lots of people that, you know, only look at fundamentals, but on a technical basis, almost all the averages and indicators are saying the strong buy for the FTSE 100 right now. I'm going to touch on something I don't really talk about a lot because I don't want to confuse people that are newbies. But sometimes you've got to look at Fibonacci retracement levels and indicators. Okay.
Yeah.
So what are they? Basically, these are prices that could retrace before resuming trends. So you're looking at 23.6, 38.2, 50% and 61 and above. And that's what you're looking for on levels. So you're looking at where we were sub 5,000, right at the top to, was it 7,700, Pete? And
then you've
got all the different various Fibonacci levels that you're looking at from there. So from
4.9 it went to, I think, didn't
7.9. So you're looking from 4.9 to 7.9 and all the different levels between that, top and bottom. And where we are now is sitting at a certain level, and you're looking at a pivot. If you look at the pivots now, pivots about 6305, Pete.
Yeah. Yeah.
And as I said to you, we finished at 6292. Yeah. So we're bang on near it. We talked about simple moving averages and exponential. The 50-day moving average is 6157. So we're above that. So it's a buy.
Yeah.
The market's screaming buy. The 50-day exponential is 6188. So that's a buy.
Yeah.
The 100-day, which takes you out further, is 6180, a buy. The one that we need to really push for is above that is a 6305.
Yeah? Right.
And that takes us right up to the really bullish sort of zone, Pete, where you're getting further and further in.
Yeah.
And the 5-day exponential is already, we're already above that at 6287. Yeah. The smallest you can really look at is a 5-day moving exponential. And we're at 6287.
Yeah. And that's very short. Yeah. That's very short, isn't it?
So on the Fibonacci levels, pivot now is 6305. And if you get to 6350, you're in a whole different zone then, and you're moving towards 6400. So everything's bullish at the moment. It's just if we come out tomorrow and AstraZeneca said, what's all this noise about? A vaccine, we haven't got one, you know, or we haven't got any positive news about it, and AstraZeneca falls 3-5% tomorrow, the FTSE will be back down at 6200, I guarantee.
Well, that's interesting, because is AstraZeneca the biggest stock now on the FTSE 100?
Sure is. I was saying to you this about a couple of weeks back, and it's crept up there because people have not really been keeping a notice of it. So Royal Dutch Shell, BP, HSBC, they've all taken turns over the past 5-10 years to be the number one stock in the FTSE 100. AstraZeneca is the go-to number one right now.
Yeah, so if it moves a lot, that affects the FTSE 100 quite
absolutely
a bit.
Absolutely, yeah. It does, yeah.
So on the FTSE 100, I think 6350 is a really important horizontal resistance. So if it gets through that, that's really, really positive.
Extremely.
Yeah, and the other thing that struck me, and I've been a bit confused by it, is that the FTSE 100 was giving, you know, slightly bearish signals with these 1321 bear crosses, EMA bear crosses, and the FTSE 250 was, but everything else was so bullish. You know, the American markets, I mean, they are just so bullish. The CAC looks bullish. There's a lovely triangle setting up over 6 weeks on the CAC 40. If that breaks out, it's a flat top triangle. I think that will break out to the upside. DAX looks good. I mean, everything looks good. It'd be really weird for the FTSE 100 to keep going down if everything else was going up. That just doesn't happen.
It doesn't happen, and it shouldn't happen, Pete. But we know that.
Well, sorry, yeah, it can happen. Sorry, yeah, you're
tends
right.
Not to follow any sort of logic, does it? You know what I mean?
It can be a right pig, but no, it's a weird market, I must say. And I mean, the other thing I feel at the moment I've had a few difficult weeks because, well, partly because I got spanked on Boo, which, you know, let's not even go there.
Do you want to talk about what's going on there?
Oh, mate, let's not even go there. we talked about it a lot on the thing, didn't we? On the Mellow Virtual. And I've talked about it a lot on the website and on the tweets, and I'm bored senseless by it, to be quite honest. What I'm going to say was, and I also screwed up on a FTSE 100 short, which we've talked about on the website.
Yes,
but luckily, I had the sense to get out of it fairly quick, so I limited the damage. But since that, I've had a real sort of drift on my portfolio where, you know, it's just been going down a little bit here, going down a little bit there, and just been drifting down. So it's really nice, you know, today to get a nice solid up day. And I know I've got decent stocks. I just need to stay patient, stick with it. I'm not taking on loads of risk. I'm not like adding any index longs or anything at the moment. I'm just being a little bit cautious as we head towards autumn, but very happy to be 100% invested.
Okie dokie. I mean, the interesting thing, Pete, is that the markets have been getting another boost from the US. We've had some good news yesterday and today, as we've said. And if we were to get anything mildly positive tomorrow or on Thursday from Oxford and AstraZeneca regarding the vaccine, the markets will do another little, get another little fillip up.
Yeah.
So that to me then is quite positive for the markets. What's being talked about, as I said to you before, is all these different contingencies about stimulating the market and continue to stimulate the market. We saw just yesterday Vodafone, which is obviously another large company in the FTSE, and BT, yeah, which is lesser so now, getting a boost from this Huawei judgment and the fact that they're going to pull Huawei 5G and all the rest of it and all their components over the next umpteen years. You know, and I'm not sure, there's lots of debate on Twitter about, you know, that whether that's Boris kowtowing down or bowing to pressure from Trump or not. I don't want to get into that politics side of it, but
yeah,
BT have been boosted by that, Vodafone's been boosted by that, because obviously that means that their components and what they're doing are going to be going into the network systems rather than a Chinese entity. So there's lots of different things going on that could help the market go higher, but it only takes a flick of a switch or somebody to say something or other, and we're back again. It's so volatile, it's so fickle.
Yeah.
You can't get married to the fact that, oh, we're going up now, this V-shape is back on. Because as I said to you before, I don't think it's a V-shape. I think it's more of a W, and where these spikes are, I don't really know. But be mindful to not get carried away and think, that's it, I'm back in the market, I'm 100% invested or 95% invested, or I'm staying cash. Because you've got to be able to see the opportunities and then take them as you see them, rather than being wedded to one way or the other, I think.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's interesting because I think you're absolutely right on the economy. I mean, the economy figures were dire yesterday, weren't they? It was they were expecting 5% up in May, wasn't it? The GDP for May. And it only recovered like 1.8%, which is like barely anything. I mean, I think June will be better, because we've had more easing of the lockdown and there's less C19 around, so people are perhaps a bit less scared. But it's pretty obvious things are pretty dire out there, aren't they?
Yeah, I mean, Burberry came out saying they're cutting jobs. We spoke about...
Well, Burberry are in trouble because of they've got so many establishments in airports and things, you know, travel hubs. You think how much sales they're losing there?
Absolutely, Pete. But this is what I keep reiterating to people. You need to know what's going on with the macro. You know, Pete and I can just come on here and just talk about stocks, right? However, you need to know about what's going underlying. You need to know that there's jobs going here, there's jobs going there, there's cuts being made there, because they're going to affect the actual individual stocks that you own. Yeah. So if we're not talking about it here because you guys would prefer us to just concentrate on stocks, please go away and look at what's going on and underlying underneath your stocks. These contracts are not coming to these manufacturing companies. They're not coming to these engineering companies. They're not coming to these, you know, other companies that are out there, tech companies, and they're not returning to work. I'm talking to people and economists and all the rest of it that are based in London, and they're wandering around London. It looks like a ghost town. The major companies are not opening. Yeah, there is, the workers are not returning to work yet. Yeah, the trains are empty. You know, apart from peak hours.
The knock on of that. You know, the knock on to like sandwich bars and restaurants and news agents. I mean, it's got massive knock-ons, this, you know, the fact that everyone's sort of hiding in their houses.
Absolutely. And they're just not returning to, you know, this is why Rishi Sunak's coming out with all these deals of go to the restaurant Monday to Wednesday, go to the pub, you know, wear a mask everywhere, because they're trying to encourage people to go back to work, go into the pub and drink, and go into the pub and have a nice meal, go to the restaurant and do social activities and create a norm, because this is a massive period of time for lots of the hospitality industry. And if we don't use July to September to generate income for X, Y, and Z, some of these large entities and small mom and pop sort of entities will be gone.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, you've obviously got theatre land and all that side of things. That's another issue. But no, you're absolutely right. You know, a lot of these companies make, especially in travel as well, they make their money in the summer, and that helps them survive through the winter. Well, absolutely, they won't be making anything this summer. In fact, a lot of them are open now and losing money. I mean, it's going to be so difficult for them. It brings me back to an interesting, something I had written down as a sort of related topic that we could talk about. I'll just throw it in quickly. I just wanted to point out, and this is something that I'm sure everyone knows him, Shifting Shares, at Shifting Shares, Michael. It was something I was reading that he'd written a while ago that got me thinking about, you know, cyclical stocks and long-term buy holds. And I think there is that distinction where I think you've got stocks like AstraZeneca, which are going to do pretty well, you know, whatever, really. You know, they are classic defensives, and they're classic shares that you can buy and hold, long-term buy hold, and you'll probably do pretty well. But then you've got other ones that are cyclicals, and that is loads of things we've just talked about. So travel, recruiting especially. Recruiting is so cyclical. You've got marketing companies, you know, anything hospitality, retail. It's all incredibly cyclical. So it doesn't make a good long-term buy and hold. You can buy it and you can hold it for several years while the economy's good. But as soon as things start to turn and there's bad news about the economy, those types of stocks, cyclical stocks, get spanked.
And they will keep getting spanked, Pete. And unfortunately, this cycle has been going for quite a while because of how much things have been locked down and not reopening. And unfortunately, there's lots of people that are holding cyclical stocks that were and are good quality stocks, but they may not recover and return to the highs that they were in February or in 2019, because simply the amount of money that they were generating then, they're not going to be able to generate because things have been locked down and the consumer or their buyers haven't returned yet and are not likely to return yet until things are much, much rosier.
Oh, well, actually, while we're on that subject, I mean, related to that is that when cyclical stocks do start to do well, they will recover, they will gain quicker than the more defensive, boring stuff, yeah? But one that's interesting is the auto sector. I think it was VTU, you know, Virtu. They were ahead. Their sales for June were much better than they expected on new car sales and on used car sales, which was really quite surprising.
Is that better than what they were expecting, Pete?
Or yeah.
No, bear with me. Well, better than what they reduced their worst expectations to.
Yeah, it was better than it was better than what they'd reduced their worst expectations to. But the point was that what they were saying was that there is definite evidence of lots of their customers sat at home, not spending any money, getting paid furlough money, or working from home and getting lots of money. They're not spending it. They're not going on holiday this year. And it ties into, I've got a good mate who sells motorbikes, and he is absolutely booming. He is selling so many motorbikes. And it's simply because there's lots of people who aren't spending their money. They're not going on holiday. They're cash rich. And they think, well, we've got to spend it on something.
I've just pulled up some notes here, Pete, and it's saying private car sales up 19%. Private car sales across the UK fell by 19% in June.
Yeah.
SMMT, but Virtue Motors bounces back with £9 profit after dealership reopened in June. But they still plan to cut jobs. So yeah, that's
pretty. Is that 9 million profit or £9?
Nine million yeah. Pounds. So yeah, like you say, people are saving that money up going and looking at cars. I find that very interesting actually, because the cars that you had have been sitting on the drive for the past 2 months doing very little apart from going to the shop back.
Yeah.
So that's very interesting indeed. It's not a company or a sector I'd be buying, you know, any of the
well,
because they're on the again, if they do well in the next 2 years, they could actually do extremely well.
Well, I hold Cambria Autos, CAMB.
Okay.
And that's slightly different because they're more premium. So they've got like Aston Martins and Rolls Royces and stuff like that. Whereas Virtue is more Vauxhalls and Peugeots.
Okay.
But I imagine you're getting a similar thing on both of them where there will be a lot of individuals who aren't going on holiday and they're just not spending any money. And they're like, well, I've always fancied that particular car. I'm going to go out and buy it.
Okay. Yeah, it could be interesting. Might be one to look into, Pete. Because I think what
it's probably not one to buy loads of.
No, but I think with all these companies, you spoke, what was it you spoke about ages ago? I think you spoke about Auto Trader many years ago on our podcast.
Good.
And you said something very, very interesting at the time. And I thought, I'm going to have to keep an eye on that. And I've lost track of the company, otherwise I might have had a nibble in March, April, was that a lot of these companies now are going to have to sell their cars online. And I was going, oh, really? Because the whole point of buying a car is that experience of having sitting in the car, smelling the leather of the car or the new interior of the car, having that driving experience, going back to the showroom and trying to just do a deal with the guys and the ladies that are selling you the cars. You can't do that online, Pete. But Auto Trader are basically selling the cars for all of these dealerships as well as the second-hand market, which is what you pointed out to me. But a lot of these individual dealership companies, listed and otherwise,
yeah,
are going to have to start selling their cars online.
Oh, it's gone much more that way. And it's very interesting you mention Auto, because I was reading their results the other day, and their traffic to their website in June shot up.
It was like
barely any traffic in May, with like, you know, say 10% of normal levels, and then in June it went up to something like 90%.
Well, there you go.
So it shot up.
That's another one I've missed then, Pete. Thanks for that.
Well, you say that, I think Auto is one of those, it's a classic light right move where it's that typical network effect where they're so dominant. I couldn't believe this, right? I read this and I had to read it twice. It was in Investors Chronicle. And it said Auto has got something like, I think it was 6 times, but it might have been 9 times. 6 times or 9 times the market share of its nearest competitor, which I think is Parker's, the other sort of website. But everyone uses Auto Trader.
Wow. That is pretty amazing, mate. That is pretty
amazing. Dominance, isn't it? It's that dominance. It's just like, wow. Yeah, I was impressed by that.
I've just pulled up a chart here, Pete. Got the high back in Feb at 602.
Yeah.
£6.02. And the low is heading towards, let me just get something down here, towards 360-ish.
Yeah. Oh, what a buy that was.
What a buy. One I missed. And currently it's at £5.34. So it's down just over, what, 12% or so? So it's done extremely well to bounce back. It's not far off, you know, let's say nearer to 14%, towards its high. So it's done very, very well. And those that bought, you know, had the cash and were able to buy sub £4 have done phenomenally well out of that for the last 2 or 3 months.
Mate, so, before we go on to those questions, I've got a couple of stocks that I don't hold, that I thought looked interesting. This is from results in recent days. I'll just give you the three names. First of all, Luceco, L-U-C-E, Netcall, N-E-T, and Filter, F-L-T-A. I thought all three of those, you know, look very interesting. They're still quite beat up. But they've put out good updates. And I think they've all got potential, though. So any thoughts on those?
Lusico is one I know a little bit about, and they've been talked about forever, haven't they?
They do like LED lighting stuff and wiring things and whatever.
Yeah. It's another one of them companies, Pete.
Yeah.
I think long term could do well. I think one of my concerns is the cost that they have going forward, because they've got strong cash flow, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
It's just a case of long term, can it be maintained? Because if you look at all their percentages and what they came out with recently, they're quite high. Yeah.
Mm.
And it's, for me, it's about consistency.
Well, I think the thing with Loose is that it IPO'd only a few years ago. It's not that long ago. It IPO'd and it was sort of doing all right, and then it fell down the toilet. And I can't remember why it went down the toilet, but it obviously had problems. But it struck me from reading the update the other day that they're coming out of those problems. And I don't know if there's been management changes. I would hope there has been, because that's usually a good sign of a recovery stock if you've got new governors, you know, running it. And I just thought it looked really cheap still, you know, that like there could be potential. Anyway, it's just one I was thinking about. What do you think of Netcall? Do you know much about that?
I don't know much about them, mate. Go for it.
Well, I used to hold Netcall and did pretty well on it. And I've always liked the company. I look back and I think, why did I sell it? But they do like, you know, software for call centres and things like that. But one of the things they've been doing recently is this thing called low code. And it's quite nifty because it's like a way of sort of programming something where you don't need to understand, you know, Fortran or what is it, you know, these different languages and stuff. You can sort of code you can sort of like put like normal instructions in English sort of thing, and it'll do what you ask it to do. It's really clever software. I thought that was quite interesting, and their results are really good again.
So who do they supply then, Pete? Are they supplying this to
call centers?
To SME call centers and large behemoths,
yeah,
as well?
Yeah.
So what sort of companies are they working with that you would recognise in a sense of they're serving these clients that are quite significant?
I'm not sure the company names these days, but it's, you know, it's got a nice spread of customers. I know that the guy who runs it, I think he's called Henrik Bang, and I spoke to him years ago, and he's headed up Netcall for ages. But he's probably been the head of it for at least 10 years.
Okay.
But I don't think he's that old. Yeah, you know what I mean? I don't think he's, like, really old or anything. And he used to work at Orange, I think.
Oh, okay.
I remember him telling me. So I think he's steeped in telecoms. And I just think it's an interesting one that, you know, could be worth a look.
Well, with you saying that, Pete, anything to do with call centres, working from home, blah, 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 what's happening now is that every single thing that's going wrong with anything, yeah, has to go through a call center, right? Mm. If you're working from home and something goes wrong, you're either ringing into work or ringing to somebody else or ringing to the... So if the financial services or all the rest of it, what they're doing, they've not got all the telecommunications going back to that person's mobile. They're filtering it through a call center,
yeah,
aren't they? So whether you're a retailer or you're part of the NHS or you're part of an insurance company or a financial service, everything's going through a call center and then filtered to that one worker that's taking the calls for that afternoon. So they must be booming, mate. They must be absolutely, you know, beside themselves the amount of work that they're having to cover.
I've just remembered one of the things that they do, and I'd forgotten about this, they do that queuing stuff. You know, like when you when you ring a call center and it says you're number 4 in a queue, yeah. What they do, they've got this thing where it's like it'll say, if you want, leave a message and we'll ring you back. They do that kind of software.
Okay.
It's like productivity software for call centers.
What I'm going to have to look into, Pete.
It's a really interesting company, and I think it's got a lot of cash as well, and I think the cash was going up. I mean, to be honest with you, they've always had a strong balance sheet. They always seem to have over the years.
The interesting thing for me for that, Pete, it fits in with my sort of thread of the loop up that I've got that no one liked.
Yeah.
No one was interested in it.
Nobody wanted it
at 50 pence. And now it's at £1.50. All the people that have poo-pooed it have all gone very, very quiet on loop. And now there's all this talk about we're going to continue to work from home. People are going to want to continue to work from home. Companies are going to keep a third of their staff working from home and are going to get rid of, you know, consolidate their properties and HQs and have a smaller property portfolio and use tech.
Yeah.
So that for me, Netcall, could be very, very interesting for me to look forward to researching and having a look at, most definitely. Because it sits in that thread of tech and tech going forward and less.
I think if you get your head around the low code thing, I've described it terribly. I think that low code thing has got massive potential. Because it sort of enables a call center agent who isn't like a coding guru.
Sorry, you meant Netcall there, Pete. You said Loco.
Netcall, yeah. On Netco, it means that just like a call center agent can sort of almost like program software to do what they want it to do without having to be a coder. It's clever stuff.
I like that.
It is clever. It's like productivity stuff. Anyway, I don't really understand.
Put a little circle around that name to research, mate, over the next couple of weeks.
I thought you'd find it interesting. What do you think? Do you know much about Filta? FLTA.
You just spoke about Filta. You're going to talk about. Go on, Filta. Go on.
Yeah, do you know anything about it? Or
no, not much. No,
because that's one that again hasn't been listed for long. I think it's been on the market a couple of years now. And it's one of these franchise operations, and they do like, deep fat, fat fryers and things like that. They change the oil and, they look at it.
Yes, I do know a little bit about them, Pete. Yes.
Yeah.
Clean kitchens and they take the stuff away and.
Yeah. Now, obviously, hospitality, things like hotels and pubs now, I mean, it's just dire.
Yep.
But the shares are really beat up, obviously. But, if and when we see hospitality start to recover, then Filta could be a good beneficiary of that. But what's really interesting as well, they've launched a COVID-19 offering. Like sort of cleaning. I think it's like some sort of like sanitizer stuff where it'll clean stuff and it'll clean surfaces and whatever, and it stays on there for a while and stuff, and they offer it like a service.
That is brilliant. With the pubs opening, mate, every time they get a warning that someone's been visited their pub has been infected, they've got to shut it down for two days, 3 days. So if they can get any of that business to go in there and do a deep clean, sanitize, clean, boy, that could be good for them.
Yeah, so I thought, the thing is, because they've already got the customers, because they do the oil thing for them, they do something else as well, but I can't remember what it is. But I just thought that could be interesting.
Yeah, it's a bit like the .com, isn't it? You add tech to your ensemble, and all of a sudden you get another set of investors or reappraisal of what you actually should be worth. So if that COVID-19 solution they come up with works and they generate a bit more income from that could offset what's not going on in the hospitality bit that's not been open, if you know what I mean.
So, like a sort of another string to their bow sort of thing.
I think we need to reiterate to you ladies and gents that are listening out there, the reason why
anyone's listening still.
The reason why Pete and I sometimes talk about these stocks that are off the radar is the time to buy them and to research them is when they're off the radar, not when they're up 15, 20, 100, 200, 300%, when everybody else has bought them. You've got to do your research. You've got to be confident enough in your research and buy them and then wait to see if anyone else agrees with you. Don't buy a stock because everyone else is in consensus and agreement that the stock is great. Carry on, Pete.
Well, mate, it's just occurred to me, we've been talking for quite a while. By the way, we're recording this on Wednesday, the 15th of July, and it's probably roughly around 6 o'clock now. We ought to just look at some of these questions.
Yeah, let's go for it.
Yeah, so, right. Okay, So I've got an email here with a long list of questions on it. I'm just very quickly whizzing through.
Pete, one sec. Please reiterate that these questions are from Mellow Virtual. So thank you, ladies and gents, that attended. And please bear with us because we can't get through all of these questions in the next 25 minutes. But we really appreciate it. And that's the reason why we're talking about them now. So thank you for the questions. And we're going to try and get through as many as we can now.
Go for it. Right. We've got a question from somebody called Red Alert. That reminds me of Red Adair. Can you remember Red Adair, the oil truck?
Yeah.
Anyway, that's for the oldies, that one. It says on it, "Hi, Pete. Can you tell me anything about net nets? With examples, if possible, if that's not too cheeky. Thank you." Any idea what he's talking about, mate?
Yeah. Essentially, I'm always talking about sum of parts. And you can use this for listed companies. You can use it for funds even. And if you're looking at funds, it's quite easy because the NAV will say £1. Yeah. And the share price will be £1. That's the most simplistic way I can put it. And that is net net.
So this is as I understand it, this is a Ben Graham concept, isn't it? From the Intelligent Investor and things like that. And it's very much the Warren Buffett old way of doing things.
Yes.
So you're saying that, and so you could have like a net asset value of £1, and if a share price is £1.
Yeah.
So what does that mean then? That basically means that it's valued at its assets.
Yes. That's
so you're getting the future business and the future earning streams in for nothing.
Yes. Let me just read you the defining thing here, Pete.
Okay, that's a good idea. Yeah.
Net is a value.
We're flexible here.
Net is a value investing technique developed by Ben Graham in which a company is valued based solely on its net current assets. Net focuses on current assets, taking cash and cash equivalents at full value, then reducing accounts receivable for doubtful accounts and reducing inventories to liquidation values. Net value is calculated by deducting total liabilities from adjusted current assets.
Right, I'm remembering it now. So it's basically you take the assets of a company in effect, but you don't include fixed assets like buildings and stuff like that. You're looking at the what they call the current assets, which are the things that have got like instant values, things like cash and things you can convert readily into cash. Yeah. So if something is valued at its, you know, sort of cash value of NAV, mm-hmm. then yes, it would be incredibly cheap.
Yeah.
So can you think of anything like that? I mean, I'm struggling to think of anything that cheap. And I know that Warren Buffett sort of came to the view that there weren't many stocks like that around these days because everybody's looking for them. Any thoughts?
There are stocks out there, Pete. I'm loath to give any examples because of the fact that it's all what's the word I'm looking for? I won't say the word I'm looking for. It's in this current market, what you need to be looking for is the stocks that are lowly valued, low PE, yeah. Probably got a little bit of cash on the balance sheet, yeah. And the share price 6 months ago, a year ago, was £1 or £2, but now it's £1, 75p or 50p, and it's currently in a sector which is completely unloved. And one of those sectors at the moment, so you can go away and have a look at this sector and look all the stocks in there, are all the companies involved in loaning money to people, giving credit to people.
All right. Yeah. Well, that's interesting. You mentioned IPF earlier. Huh?
Yeah. So IPF was one of the ones that I picked up recently. I thought, whoa, this is way below what the value should be. As a sum of parts, yeah, I figured that IPF is probably worth about 120, 140, 150 at some point in the not too distant future.
Okay.
I started picking it up at sub 40p, bought some more, and currently it's nearer to 60p. I don't think the journey has started yet, but the money they've loaned out to people, they've got to get back.
Yeah.
So as an example, I think as a sum of parts, that was probably when I was purchasing it, you know, about £1.20 worth of stock. I was picking it up for sub 40p. you know, I could, it could equally have fallen back to 20 pence, you know, and they could come out with really rubbish results. But you've got to look at what's off the radar, unloved, and that's where you get your nice net value, and you can pick up, you know, it's that old walking in front of a steamroller and picking up coins, you know, at risk of being trampled. You know, you've got to buy the stuff that no one else wants. And then when the value people come out and the momentum people come out and the fear of missing out people come out, they're going to take your stock higher because all of a sudden everyone else is seeing the value that you find, you saw 6 months ago or a year ago.
Yeah, you picked up on it earlier. I mean, two examples. I mean, these are not net nets as such, but two examples of stocks that I hold that have got lots of cash on the balance sheet are TCM, which I think has got $50 million, something like that, massive amount of cash on its balance sheet, and MPAC, which I think has something like $22 million. So those are both ones where, okay, they're not strictly net nets, but they're certainly worth looking at for ones where you got very, very strong balance sheets.
Yeah, and that's the most important element of it. They've got to have strong balance sheet because the net could just be a fake. And what's happening now, as we've seen, is a constant noise about accountancy companies not actually doing the books properly and things being fudged and things going wrong and companies going belly up as a consequence. We saw that with, what was the last one, Pete? Was it Carillion, the last one? There's been quite a few. So sometimes these net nets aren't quite what they seem, and the property, depending on what the property is that they've got that's sitting there, on a disused factory or a factory that they used to have that's sitting on the land now not doing anything, needs to be repurposed, and that could cost all kinds of money depending on what it was used for before, whether there's asbestos in the building. So the building, in theory, if it was a normal building, might be worth 10 million. But after all the rehabilitation of that building, it might only be worth 5. So, you know, you've got to be careful about what value is put on assets.
Yeah. So how you valued the individual segments. Mate, I'm just aware of the time because we're sort of like, you know, just got a few minutes to keep this under the hour. What I'm thinking is let's forget the questions now because I've looked at the rest of the questions. They're all quite involved. One thing I do want to throw in quickly. You had a really good interview with Martin Sorrell the other day. I've heard so many positive things about it. You did a brilliant job. So that's S4 Capital, S-F-O-R. Now, I had a discussion with a good guy from Twitter about this, and something that struck me was that there aren't many marketing companies, small marketing companies, left on the market. They're all getting snapped up. You look, Cello has gone, Huntsworth has gone, Chime has gone. You know, all in recent years, they've all disappeared, and there's not much around now that is a decent marketing company.
You've caught it there. You've caught the hook there, Pete. You're absolutely spot on.
And the ones that I thought of that are sort of decent, that are still hanging around, obviously I'm not thinking of WPP, whether that's decent or not, I've no idea, because that's a big one, yeah? And if anything, that's more likely to be a buyer. But the little ones, there's one that had results today. The Mission Group, TMG.
Okay.
Those results looked all right, so that was interesting. I think it's called Next 15 Communications, NFC.
Yeah, they've been around for a good while, they have, yeah.
Yeah, and I think that seems quite a good company, so that's interesting. And then there's one I do hold, Kin and Carter, KCT, which is sort of in that field as well. So, but otherwise, there's just not much around.
Like you say, Pete, they've all been taken over, or they've been consolidated into larger companies, and it's a very, very competitive field, Pete. And unfortunately, you've got the Saatchi one there as well, Pete.
Been around for
a long, long time.
Any idea what the Epic is on that?
Oh, one second.
Thanks, mate.
The Saatchi one is SAA.
SAA.
Yeah.
So I never knew that. That's weird.
M and C Saatchi.
Yeah.
Yeah, SAA. So you've got all those companies there, really, and what's happened is that there's been consolidation after wave of consolidation, and like, and as you've rightly pointed out, Huntsworth was the last one, and that was a significant premium pre-COVID debacle, yeah. And share prices getting hammered. So I suspect,
and they were like a sort of PR company,
yeah.
mainly for health things, I think, weren't they?
Yeah.
They did a lot of health lobbying and stuff in America and things.
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, so you're in a sweet spot there of what's being consolidated, because they're looking now. A lot of these companies, as Sir Martin Sorrell pointed out, are having to move to tech, to digital, to online, and to programmatic algorithms. Because that's the only way to actually get the best price for the advertising or the marketing that you're doing. It's not a case of, you know, going to an arena and putting on a show, or, you know, putting it into a newspaper, or as much so in a magazine, or whatever. Because you look now at what's going on, even with the football and the sports, Pete, people can't attend those events. So
yeah.
you're pulling it on the billboard, and the digital facade is changing from one advertiser to the next advertiser. Whereas before, we used to drive to here, there, and everywhere, so our signage, that advertisement stayed up for 3 months, and then it came, and then someone else put their advertisement there for 3 months, and so on and so forth. With digital and all the different ways of doing it now, that signage can be filled by 20 different companies over the course of one day, and each day, those 20 can have an hour each on that signage. Are you with me?
So it's different ways of doing it. I guess it brings us to another point that there are like companies that there's one on the market. Is it something outdoor, Open Outdoor or something? I can't quite remember the name of it. But there's companies that do like the advertising boards and stuff. And then you've got things like companies that do the actual databases for marketing and all that kind of stuff. So there's sort of variations on it, but I guess the thing with companies like TMG and NFC especially, and KCT, is they are much more like a traditional marketing company, but they've sort of gone more digital. So yeah. I think that's interesting.
I think you've touched on a great space here, Pete. And obviously I'm biased because I love my tech and AI and all that.
Have you got anything in that space, do you think?
No, not really. Not really. Because I've been focused on other things.
Yeah.
But what you've touched on there is the fact that if they're moving towards more digital, it means that the revenue they're losing from print and hard copy media,
old fashioned
legacy stuff, is going to be enhanced by them moving towards digital and online and so on and so forth. And that then puts them in a space of bigger margins as well.
Oh yeah.
And with regards to less travel and all the rest of it, a lot of the work can be done wherever these digital, you know, specialists are.
Yeah, the workers in these companies can all be sat at home,
sat at home anywhere they want and be doing the work, you know.
But you know what, that's an interesting point, because that's another reason why old-fashioned billboard advertising is pretty useless at the moment.
It's not as good as
no one's going to see it.
Yeah.
No one's driving into London. No one's going on a train. They're not going to see it.
No, absolutely. You know, and the other thing as well, Pete, is that we've spoken about the legacy issues of media. The main problem with most media now is television isn't watched the way it was before. You know, television now is the adverts come on. That's your excuse to go to the toilet or put the kettle on.
Yeah.
So when you're doing streaming now, which is way most people are watching things. They're watching it on demand. You're embedding certain algorithms to put the adverts in within that space of time. So it's not actually an advert within an advert. It's technology pushing a brand.
Yeah.
So it's very, very clever what's going on now, mate. Very, very clever. So,
but obviously mustn't forget S4 Capital, SFOR, That's the one that you spoke to at Mellow.
Yeah, I mean, it's done phenomenally well for the investors that have been in the stock thus far. I suspect, you know, you guys will have to listen to the interview when it's published by David and the team at Mellow Events. They've done well. He's got massive plans for that company. It's gone from him investing 40 million in the company. It's now worth 1.5, 1.6 billion in the space of 2 years. It's profitable. you know, WPP has gone from being worth $16 billion down to being worth 7.2, and I can see him pushing that company up until it's either the same value, if not higher, than WPP.
You see it overtaking, can't you?
I can see him just pushing.
And I guess in many ways it's probably easier to build a new world digital marketing company from scratch than it is to take an old world one with its old set in the ways, old habits, and change that into a digital one.
Absolutely spot on, Pete. And that's what it is. I mean, he's got a goal and ambition. This chap now, he kept moving between whether he's 74 or 75, but he's sprightly. He's fit. You know what I mean? He's working from 8 o'clock in the morning till 8 o'clock at night. He's covering calls in the US, in India, in Australia. He's doing the globe. Yeah? Phenomenal person, mate. You know, when I talked about ad men back in the 60s and 70s and 80s, you know, in 80s and 90s, that was him. You know,
and he's
still, you know, leading the way.
Very different world, I think, is what's ahead of us. Absolutely. Mate, we're coming up to that. Well, I think we've probably been talking a little bit longer for an hour, so I don't know if you want to nail it off there.
I think that's what we'll do, ladies and gents, is that Pete and I will come back to some of those questions. And what we'll probably do is we'll both have a look at them so that we actually know what we're actually talking about when we answer your replies regarding some of those questions. And we'll try and speak about them on the next podcast, or probably the one after that, depending on how much detail we have to go into, so we can cover a couple of stocks.
There's some great questions there, which is part of the reason I didn't want to do it too quickly. Do you know what I mean? I think we need this. The one about retirement's brilliant. Yeah. So do it
some justice. So once again, ladies and gents, thank you ever so much for subscribing to this Twin Peaks podcast. Thank you ever so much for coming to have a listen to us at Mellow Events. Pete was beside himself, by the way. He loved that experience of seeing little old me in another little space of camera, seeing my nuances. And you might have noticed as well, whilst we're on video, Pete didn't interrupt me as much. Which is always nice. So it's back to normal on this particular podcast, and Pete's just talking over me. But you guys know what to expect when you hear us now. It's just pure carnage, and that's just the way we are. We won't change anything. So
that's normal.
Thank you for subscribing. Please subscribe if you haven't listened. Subscribe before, and please continue to give us the wonderful feedback that you've given us. I keep putting them in the articles that I published for the podcast. So if you look for your names in the previous write-ups, you will see your names in there if you've given us feedback as well. So thank you ever so much. Take care. Stay safe. Boris is asking us to wear masks everywhere, so please wear a mask. Think about yourself. Think about other people as well and their safety. And you don't know what their immune systems are, so wear a mask wherever you go. Take care. Stay safe. God bless.
See you later. Cheers.
This Twin Peaks Investing Podcast was brought to you in association with SharePad from ShareScope, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. Visit ShareScope.co.uk and discover the advantage.